Welcome to the weekly podcast from the Church of England. In this week's programme, the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, speaks about a boost in funding for the Lifesavers programme, Anthony McCrow-Wood talks about the Church's Mutual Credit Union, and Martin Pett speaks to us from the Eco Church launch held at St Paul's Cathedral about what his church is doing to help care for our planet. But first, Emily Finch, a youth worker from York who bought a bus in October 2014, talks to us about her vision for supporting churches in their work with young people and communities. The bus stop aims to provide a tool for local churches, and Emily began by explaining how it all got started.
So the bus stop is a youth work charity, youth and community work charity. It started about a year and a half ago when I felt that God was calling me to buy a bus. I had worked with lots of rural churches which really struggled to know how to reach out to young people or communities. They wanted to, but they didn't quite know how to do it. And I thought that something mobile would be amazing to go and help all of these churches. I knew a church that owned a double-decker bus, but it wasn't being used a lot. And I just felt like I was supposed to buy it. I felt like that was what God was telling me to do. So I was really cheeky, and I went and asked this church. I said, I think God's telling me to buy your bus. And they happened to be about to put it up for sale. And so I took that as kind of a sign that I was supposed to buy it, and it all kind of started there, really. So we work all around the north of England. It's like a community bus. It's got like a cafe on it. It's got consoles. It's got a sweet shop and like a craft table and lots of different things. And we just help churches reach their local community and young people.
Just talking about that connection with local churches in the community and with local people, what do you actually do when you kind of, I guess, park the bus up in a local community?
Yeah, sure. So there's different things depending on what it is that the church feels like the community needs. So sometimes it can simply just be getting to know members of the community, so we can use the bus as like a pop-up cafe. So it does have a cafe on it, and we just do donations for drinks and stuff, just to help the connection between the church and the community. So members of the church will come on and serve the members of the community. Sometimes it can be a youth club, like a drop-in style. So young people, just to be honest, they just flock to the bus because it looks quite exciting. So if you just open it up as a youth group on an evening, you will get young people on it. And again, that can be just good to build relationships with young people, but also we'll do like specific themed nights or activities. We've recently done a youth alpha course, which has been massively successful, and we've seen quite a lot of young people come to faith on the bus. Or we could do general youth club themes. We also do schools work on it. There's like a variety of things, but it's all about helping local churches to build relationships with communities and young people and explore faith with them, particularly those who normally would never go into a church, really.
How do you think that rural churches can address issues relating to engaging more in their communities with things like this?
Yeah, I think that essentially we've got a lot of young people and people in communities, particularly rural ones, where there's not a lot of stuff going on. And a lot of young people, specifically in rural places, are very bored. There might not be a lot of stuff, like activities for them to do on an evening. And it's a really easy way that the church can reach out to them, just simply by providing a place to be and providing people to love them and support them. And I think in terms of just building relationships with communities and with young people, it's a really simple way to start. It's just providing a space for them to be and just get to know them. And I think that would be my first thing, really, that actually, although of course we want people to come to faith, actually first and foremost we just need to get to know them and get to love and just love them before we have those conversations, really. Is what I would say. Youth provision in a lot of places is particularly poor at the moment. There's been a lot of cuts, and so actually it's a place where the church can massively stand out and provide for young people and provide for their needs, because actually they're not being met. And so that's a really obvious way that the church can be making a difference in communities.
What are your plans for the future, and how can people find out more about what you're up to?
Sure. Well, I'd love to get a second bus. And then, so my last name's Finch, so I'm like, I could have Finch's fleet of buses. That would be really exciting. I guess in terms of the future, yeah, I do think we're probably going to need a second bus at some point because it's been really popular, essentially. And we do some really regular stuff in a lot of local places to York, which is where I'm based. But also we get a lot of one-off stuff all around the north of England, really. So I wonder if we'll need a second one sometime. If you want to hear more about us, we've got a website, which is busstop.org.uk. And there's like a get in touch page. So if your church thinks that this could be a really helpful thing, or if you just want to find out more, head there and let us know.
Lifesavers is a national financial education programme for primary schools set up by the Archbishop's Task Group for Responsible Credit and Savings. The programme combines values-based financial education with a savings club encouraging pupils to save on a regular basis. Archbishop Justin reflects on a recent visit to St Bartholomew's School in South London, piloting the programme.
I was very inspired by it because the kids weren't going through the motions. It was something that really had gripped them and was motivating them and seemed to be sinking in at quite a depth. And I was also very inspired by it because the teacher was using Lifesavers to bring in loads of other bits of curriculum. I mean, basic numeracy is an obvious one, but also people skills, emotional intelligence, service ideas of service and doing things for other people, budgeting. It gives rise to a very rounded educational process.
It was part of your task group on responsible credit and savings to have financial education. Is it what you envisaged?
It's much better than I envisaged. I think it's fair to mention Virgin Money because they gave us the means to get the pilots off the ground, and that's very exciting. And when I saw that coming in, I thought, well, this could be quite good. It's much more imaginative than I thought it would be, and I think the resource we've had has enabled people to do, I mean, not a Rolls Royce, but a very high-end, well-produced, well-designed programme rather than something where you're scratching around to make the most of very little resource. So it's much, much better than I thought it would be.
The children you were talking to today, you talked about how they would come from families where there were arguments over money and issues with money. Do you really think that helping them at that young age can help them in the future?
Well, they used to say that give us the child at seven, we'll give you the person for life. So, I mean, which recognises, and the studies, the academic studies recognise, that habits around money, around how we handle money, are formed much, much earlier than we've ever assumed. And they're usually formed subconsciously. They're formed by observing parents or home life, guardians, whoever's looking after you. They're formed through the media, through television in particular, and electronic media. What this is doing is providing serious formation of those values of how we handle money in a way that makes money a servant, not a master. Because most of the other models we see, money ends up running people's lives. And what we want is that people run their money.
Why did you want the Church of England to be involved in this?
Because partly it's about human flourishing. I think one of the things I was praying for in the assembly this morning was for those households of the children where there was real money problems. Where there's serious money problems, you tend to get substance abuse will often be something that's a temptation for people to escape from what's happening to them. It will lead to relationship strains, it leads to sometimes marital breakdowns and stuff, it leads to violence, domestic violence quite often, where people are so tense. So the way that money is dealt with is something that is about human flourishing at its deepest level. Since the salvation of Christ, the good news of Jesus Christ is for the whole human being. We don't sort of compartmentalise ourselves into the spiritual or the non-spiritual. It's obvious that that's something the church should be doing. And then practically, since the church is involved in the education of a million kids, in the country, we have a particular platform on which to contribute. I'm absolutely thrilled and very grateful both for the Virgin money and the government money, and I'm really delighted. I'm more than just pleased. I think this is something that is enormously exciting. It's down to earth and very, very practical, and it shows every sign of a pretty exciting future.
The Church's Mutual Credit Union has opened the way for a sixth major British church to join as a member just under a year after the credit union was formally launched. Anthony McCrowood, CMCU President, spoke to us about the progress that's been made so far.
Yes, we've got over 600 members now, and we've got deposits of over 1.4 million. And over a million of that is from individuals depositing share capital or shares and savings. And we've also lent out now over £700,000, largely car loans, but also some personal loans, and also a new product that we've started, which is a restructuring loan for those in moderate difficulty that we feel we can help. So it's very solid progress for a startup credit union. It's pretty well unheard of to be that degree of savings and to be that lent out so quickly. So it's good progress, a long way to go yet towards being self-sustaining, but we've made a very solid start.
At the CMCU's AGM, you also voted in favour of giving a dividend to all your savers.
Indeed, and that's part of the strategy, because if you want to attract savers, you've got to give them some return. And so we aim to be perhaps not the market leader, but certainly a good rate of return compared to what else is available at the moment, which was a 1% dividend on many savings accounts.
Do you have a message for people within the churches that are part of the CMCU?
Yes, you've joined a good institution, a sound financial institution that is going to grow and go from strength to strength. As it develops, we hope you'll come to see it more as your primary financial institution. In the long run, we will be offering a wide range of financial products, and so stick with us for the journey.
Can you describe who's eligible to become a member?
Yes, anybody who's an ordained minister or a lay minister with a bishop's license, or a trustee of a church charity, and that means PCC members in Church of England terms, but also Church of Scotland, that means elders, so anybody who's an officer, and also the other categories, of course, employees of churches and church charities are also eligible to join. And household members, so that if you live in a household, such as your husband, for instance, could join, because you're a church employee.
You also voted at the AGM to allow the United Reformed Church to join the CMCU. I know that it has to go to approval by the regulators and to the URC's General Assembly, but what would that mean to the Church's Mutual Credit Union?
Well, our long-term ambition is to include as many denominations as possible within the credit union, and so the United Reformed Church is the first step in extending the common bond, and we're in exploratory conversations with other denominations as well, so that it can be a credit union that serves all the churches. And again, another long-term aim is that all active church members will be able to join the credit union, and that's about 4 or 5 years off, but it's certainly a long-term aim, so it could be a very big credit union in the long run.
What does it mean to you to see the British churches working together like this?
It's great, isn't it? You know, absolutely, it's energising, it's positive, and it's us coming together around a common goal of trying to bring mutuality back into the British financial sector, which is very important, because the mutual model reminds us that in financial transactions where there is relationship, it tends to stop the tendency towards exploitative practices.
And for you personally, you've worked for a long time on creation of this credit union. How did you feel during this first AGM?
I'm very, very pleased that there was tremendous energy in the room. We had ordinary members that took the trouble to come. We had about seven or eight ordinary members here as well as board members, which is a positive sign of interest from the membership. We had elections for the board and for the supervisory committee, which again is some credit unions struggle to get board members, let alone have elections. So it was positive member participation and democracy, and a great sense of achievement that we've come a long way in a short space of time.
Finally this week, EcoChurch, an award scheme for churches helping them to express their care for our planet, recently launched at St Paul's Cathedral. Former Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, spoke at the event, and Martin Pett, a member of Trinity Lewis and a part of the Eco team there, explained how they are building an eco congregation.
Trinity at Southover, we've recently combined with two other churches, St John's Sub Castro and South Malling Church, from what's one church on three sites with six congregations throughout the weekend.
You've just given a talk at the launch of Eco Church. Can you tell us how you came to give this talk?
Over 7 or 8 years, we've been developing Southover Church as an eco congregation. I've got involved with working with the Chichester Diocese Environmental Action Group, and through that I spoke at a training day in September, which Ruth Valerio, who's the Theology and Churches Director of Arosha, heard that and asked me if I would give a similar talk here at St Paul's Cathedral for the launch of Eco Church.
Can you tell us a little bit about what you've done in Trinity over the years?
Well, over the years we've done a whole wide range of things. We've concentrated on three particular key aims: practical projects, outreach, and all age education. The practical projects started with the churchyard, which we've been developing for biodiversity. We've worked with the Sussex Wildlife Trust on a project called Downtown Lewis. The aim was to make eco corridors, wildlife corridors throughout the town, really to develop a living landscape in Lewis so that all these areas link up together for wildlife. So as part of that, we've had things like bat walks, wildflower surveys, working parties in the churchyard. It's been a really good way of getting people that are both churchgoers and non-churchgoers together.
Sounds like a lot of work. Do you think the Eco Church is just another burden on parishes?
I don't think it should be looked on. It certainly isn't a burden. It's what we should be doing. Caring. We're called to be stewards of creation. We should absolutely be doing this. There's no ifs and buts about it. It's something that every church should be doing. With the launch of Eco Church, I think it makes it a little easier for churches to get on board. There's going to be plenty of resources and information there available for churches to get ideas of what to do and how to go about it.
What about the parishes that say, well, it's all too big for us, this climate change problem? What can we do as a parish?
But every little thing as an individual, as a church, as a congregation, diocese, doesn't matter what denomination, everything like that, that matters. Any little thing that you can do, helping to save energy, encourage wildlife into the churchyard, anything like that will help. You know, it's small steps to help on the journey.
How do you feel tonight about the launch of the Eco Church scheme, and will Trinity be entering into the Eco Church?
Trinity will definitely be, because we've just combined with the other two churches, which Southover has been working for 7 or 8 years to get the Eco Congregation Awards. We've got to bring the other two churches on board. It gives us an opportunity to help them and guide them in the right direction as well.
So do you recommend this to other churches?
Absolutely. It's a very, very good way of going forward. There'll be, amongst the resources, there'll be ways that it can be used in Scripture, things from Scripture that can be used in preaching and teaching. So that's an important part as well.
That's it for this week's podcast. Thanks for listening.